Doesn't it feel like that a year ago was really 20 years ago? Do you remember the beginning of 2020? Everyone was saying a lot of the same things. Because we were rolling into a new decade, I just remember hearing over and over again people saying, hey, it's a new year. It's a new decade. It's a new you. As I was thinking about today, I went back and read this article that I had remembered reading in December of 2019 that referenced how we had just been through some really dark, difficult years, but now we were entering this new time of hope. And then 2020 happened. But then as we got through 2020 and 2021 came, so many of us were feeling like, well, now it's a new year, and surely this new year would put the past behind us and allow us to move forward. Well, here we are. Suddenly, 2021 just started feeling like it was 2020 part two. And we all love the fresh optimism of a new year. So I don't want to be critical about that. I mean, all of us know what it's like to get that new job and to have so much hope that this new job would be better than the last one. Or maybe you had a broken relationship in your past, and now you're entering into this new relationship with all of those feelings and butterflies and hopes of, man, this one really could be the one. And when it comes to your sports team, I mean, all of us are guilty of feeling like, you know what, this is the year. I mean, as an Atlanta Braves fan, that's how I feel, that this is our year. At our house, we watch a lot of animated movies. I wouldn't necessarily choose that, but because we have a lot of little kids, that's just what ends up being on the screen. And just the other day, I was in our van, and there was a movie playing in the back that I just naturally started singing along to. It was that movie that Disney released back in the 90s called Pocahontas. Do you remember the song that really rose above even that movie? The song about the river bend, you know, where she's standing there singing, what's around the river bend, waiting beyond the river bend, where my dreams will sure extend. I'm sorry for the singing, but you get the idea, right? That this song is brimming with hope and expectation that surely when we get around the corner, there's going to be something good. But it almost feels like that as we've gotten around the river bend, it was just a waterfall. Or as we just climbed the hill and got to the top of the hill where we were just, oh, finally we're over it. Oh, there's another hill. Or we move through the traffic thinking, okay, finally we can start moving again, and then we hit more construction. I mean, I'm kind of running out of illustrations here, but you get the idea, you know, standing in an ocean and a wave comes and you get through it and it feels like there's another one coming. It's as if the hits just keep on coming. And that's frustrating, right? That's challenging when we feel like we're through it, but it's just another challenge and another obstacle. Here's something else that we're going to have to move through. Here's what's probably most difficult, if I can just start off with something that's somewhat depressing, is this, that as difficult as life can seem and certainly has seemed, we have no promise that it's going to get any easier. We have no promise that there is something better around the river bend. And that's what we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks, is what do we do when the hits just keep on coming? How do you and I maintain and even grow in our faith when it just feels like it's just hit after hit after hit? How do we continue to trust God when things don't seem to improve? And maybe even most difficult, is it worth following Jesus? Even when it seems that this year might not be better than the last? See, I know all of us are, we're all tempted to vacillate between these two extremes of the way we see life. There are times when we see life through a lens of faith. It feels like an extreme at times because it almost feels disconnected with reality at times. Yeah, I mean, as a pastor, I hope that we all see life through a lens of faith. It's a beautiful thing, and it's often misunderstood. And you've seen it before, especially for those of you that don't consider yourself a Christian. Maybe you're not really interested in following Jesus, and you're still trying to figure out what faith in Jesus looks like. You've experienced a lot of the Christian cliches that no one's really proud of, you know, where we say things like, when someone goes through a hard time, well, God knew this was going to happen. In fact, I heard someone say this the other day, and so, I mean, I just nodded along, but in the back of my mind, I thought, really? God knew this was going to happen? Well, I wish he would have stopped it, because oftentimes this lens of faith disconnected from everything else makes it seem like we're just in complete denial. But then there are other times in life where we have a different lens, a lens of suffering, where we get so consumed with all of the wrong, all of the bad, all of the hard, all of the difficult, all of the suffering of life. And the reason why both of these extremes are actually important is because a lens of faith disconnected from the lens of suffering leaves us feeling like or seeming like we're not really in touch with what's going on in this world. But then on the flip side, a lens of suffering disconnected from a lens of faith is just honestly quite depressing. And so what I hope to do over the next couple of weeks is help us all find not one or the other, but to help us all find a lens of faith even in the middle of our suffering. Because that's when our faith is really best. That's when our faith is most in line with what's accurate about life. That's when our faith really comes alive. Our faith will be most defined in the season of the most suffering. That it's not when everything is good that we need our faith. No, it's in the season of suffering, in the season of difficulty, in the season where it's challenging and overwhelming and there's hurt and loss and brokenness, it's during that time that we not only need our faith, but it's in that time that we actually can experience the most growth in our faith as well. So what we're going to do for the next few weeks is we're going to look at just this one narrative from the very beginning of the time when churches started to pop up, the first century when the message of Jesus started to really spread. But before we jump into it, I just want to give a couple of words of caution around suffering. Maybe these are reminders, but as we're talking about suffering, let's be careful to not play the hardship Olympics, you know, where we give the gold medal to the person that suffered the most. Sometimes we devalue our own suffering. Sometimes we elevate our own suffering because it feels less than or better than other people or more than others. But let's do everything we can do to resist comparing or even assessing our suffering based on others. Because there's just not a lot of good in comparing our suffering to each other. And as we get into this narrative, I really want us to resist the same thing, because what these people went through hopefully is so much worse than what most of us are going through or have been through or maybe even will go through. This narrative is found in the book of Acts, which is it's an incredibly inspiring sequence of events and stories that lead to the beginning of all of these churches in the first century. And it was led by one particular person. His name was Saul. We know him now as Paul. And he's really kind of he's a pioneer because of what he did to start so many different churches. And this story is just one little sliver of a moment of suffering that he found himself in the middle of. And he was no stranger to suffering. But this one had to be one of the most difficult, challenging moments. Here's the way the story goes down. This is in Acts chapter 16, verse 16. Once, when we, the collective group of people that were following, Luke is the author of this, he says, once when we were going to the place of prayer, we were met there by a female slave who had a spirit by which she predicted the future. Now, they call it a spirit. Some of you would say, that sounds like a wonderful thing to have. In this case, she had made a lot of money for other people off of it, but it wasn't necessarily serving her well. She earned a great deal of money for her owners by this gift, this ability to tell the future, fortune telling. And she followed Paul and the rest of us, and she just walked around behind us shouting, "These men are servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved." Now, this isn't untrue. This is what they were doing. This is who they are. But she kept this up for many days. And eventually, if someone did this to you or I, eventually that would become quite irritating, right? And so finally, Paul himself became so annoyed that he turned around and he says to the Spirit, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her." And at that moment, the Spirit left her, which brought freedom for her, I would imagine, but cost the people that were earning an income, cost them a lot of money. And when her owners realized that their hope of making money was gone, well, they made an arrest. They seized Paul and Silas. Silas was one of Paul's companions on this particular journey. They seized them both and they dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. You can just picture it. This crowd of people starts gathering around, people hurling insults, people going, "Hey, who invited you into this town? Now you're here causing all kinds of problems." And so they brought them before the magistrates, the authorities, and said, "These men are Jews, and they're throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us as Romans to accept or to practice." And as we're going to find out later in this narrative, in the next couple of parts, we're going to find out that what they actually accused them of was unjust. That they didn't have the grounds, they didn't have the actual law to be able to stand on. But the crowd joined in on the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. And after they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. And when he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell, and then he fastened their feet in the stocks. I want you to remember this word, fasten, because it is so interesting that he fastened their feet to these shackles, these chains. It's wild what happened here, but in a matter of maybe an hour or two, Paul and Silas, they go from relative anonymity to being publicly shamed, scorned, beaten, and then thrown into prison. In the immortal words of Ron Burgundy, that escalated quickly. And it was completely unfair. Totally unjust. Maybe the rulers gave them over to the jailer because the crowd had been worked into such a frenzy. Maybe the rulers knew if we don't put them in jail, they're going to ultimately be murdered by the crowd. But they put them in chains, fastened their feet to the stocks, and put them in this inner cell, which wasn't exactly a room with a view. And about midnight, on what had to be one of the darkest days of their lives, Paul and Silas were. And I wanted to pause it right there because I really want to invite you, if you would, to put yourself in their shoes. You have your own midnight moment. You have your own dark night of the soul. You have your own situation. Maybe you're in the middle of it now. Maybe it's something you think back on in your past. I know when I think about my past and I think about what I was doing, if you were to find me at midnight on one of the worst moments of my life, I would imagine what I was doing was yelling at God, filled with anger at him. Why would you let this happen? Why don't you do something about this? Begging him to intervene, begging him to allow others to help. Maybe if I were in Paul and Silas's situation, I would have been even making my own funeral arrangements, realizing that, oh, well, this seems like a foregone conclusion. I don't know what you were doing, but we know what Paul and Silas were doing. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. Is that hard to even fathom? Is it hard to even believe that in the middle of all of that suffering, having just been beaten, having been falsely accused and put in prison, that they were praying and singing hymns to God? When we talked about this lens of faith, this is what I mean, that at times it seems out of this world. It seems disconnected with reality. But what we know about Paul, maybe not as much with Silas, but certainly about Paul, is that he had been through loads of suffering. This was not his first time, and it wouldn't be the last time. That he was experiencing deep suffering, deep pain in life. And so he wasn't disconnected with reality, but he was willing to put on this lens. He was willing to put his hope in what he knew to be true, to put his faith, to fasten his faith in what he knew was true about God. See, suffering has this unique way of revealing a lot about us. Suffering, in a way, it reveals what we have tied our faith to, right? Suffering, when we're at our worst, when we're in our darkest moments, oftentimes we realize, sometimes in a good way, oh, wow, my faith is fastened to something more than I thought it was. But then sometimes we find out, oh, I've been tying my faith to something that isn't sure. You know that feeling when your savings account starts to dwindle and you start getting all of that anxiety and fear and worry and concern? Or when there is the health scare, or when the other person walks out, it reveals something about us. It's almost like a tube of toothpaste. You know, the it's hard to know how much is really in there, but when you squeeze it, you find out exactly what's in there. And suffering does just that. It squeezes us in such a way that it reveals what's actually on the inside. It reveals what we've actually been tying our faith to. And in the case of Paul and Silas, it's pretty clear that their faith was tied to something way stronger than surely it's going to get better. Their faith was tied to something stronger than surely next year is going to be better. Their faith was tied to something stronger than hopefully around the river bend it's going to be even better. And that's what I feel like would be important for us to talk about in this first part of this series is what are you tying your faith to? What am I tying my faith to? Oftentimes, we tie our faith to promises that God didn't even make. Like, God never promised that we won't experience suffering. We all hopefully know the reality of this, but when I face suffering, that's one of the first things I do is go, God, what are you doing? I don't like this. This feels awful. I like life when it's comfortable, when it's working out for my benefit, but Jesus actually promised us that there would be suffering coming. God never promised that we would have our health. At least the last time I checked, the death ratio of death to people is still 1-to-1, right? That everyone is going to face death at some point. That hasn't changed. And good health isn't a promise that we should cling to because it hasn't been promised to us. No, he hasn't even promised that our lives would always get better. He hasn't promised that everything would always be up and to the right. Because Paul's life wasn't. It didn't exactly get better from here. And I don't know that yours will. I don't know that mine will. And I wonder, what should we fasten our faith to? What should we tie our faith to? See, what I think would be best for you, what I think would be best for me, is to tie our faith to what is actually true, what has happened. Faith actually is best fastened to actual promises and not future outcomes or even our hope of future outcomes. No, it's tied best to what is true, what has happened, what we can depend on, what God has said and what he has done. And see, faith, when things are good, when things are easy, when things are working out, it's pretty easy to have faith in who God says he is, in what God has done, in what we know to be true. But Paul and Silas are so inspiring to me because they had faith even in the toughest times. And what I want for myself is I want a faith that is pandemic proof. I want for you a faith that is pandemic proof, that can get you through the next hard time, that can hold you sure, that can hold you with certainty no matter what comes your way. But it starts with trusting in what God has promised us. Yeah, faith is great, but faith in light of the suffering of this life, it only works when we have faith in actual promises and things he's really said. I want to give you just two. There's a number of them, but here's two that I think are relevant to this discussion, maybe even relevant for this time. Maybe these are what Paul and Silas found themselves trusting in, tying their faith to. Here are two promises worth believing in. The first one is this, that God is with us even in the suffering. I don't know much that comforts me more than that. That in the middle of the pain, that in the middle of the hard times, that he is with us. And he's with you. If you're in the middle of a season of infertility, he's with you. If you're in the middle of a season of singleness, wondering when is it going to happen for me? He is with you. If you're in the middle of a health scare, if you're in the middle of a job loss, if you're in the middle of some kind of chronic pain, he's right there with you in the suffering. That is a promise that you can take to the bank. And I would imagine Paul and Silas, as they're standing there with their feet fastened and their arms chained, singing hymns and praying to God, that they had to trust in that as well, that God was right there in the jail cell with them. Here's the other one, is that God will make something good out of the suffering, that God will bring something good out of it. It doesn't mean we have to be grateful for the suffering. It doesn't mean we will look back and go, I am so glad that happened. No, I don't know that we will. But what we can be sure of is that he will make it matter. He will make it count. Which, when you're in the middle of it, isn't always the most satisfying, but it's so good to know that he is going to do something good because of the hard that you're going through. And it may be way down the road, and you may not see it in 2020 vision like you hope to, but when the hits keep on coming, holding on to that promise, fastening your feet in the promise that he's going to do something good because of this is so helpful. This morning I woke up, as obviously I was thinking about this message a lot, and I woke up with this terrible feeling because of this conversation I had last night. It was a precious conversation, but it was with our 7-year-old daughter, and she's our third child, and you can imagine how this works if you don't have kids. You know, your first child, I mean, you're on edge. You're trying to get everything just right. The second child, maybe a little less. By the third one, you're just hoping that they have clothes on and are fed. That's really the hope, right? And I'm sitting there talking to her, and I'm putting her to bed, and I noticed on her bedside table that she had a tooth in a Ziploc bag. And I happened to be with her the day before when she lost the tooth. And so immediately as I was talking to her about it, I thought, oh no, I didn't circle up with my tooth fairy partner, my wife, to find out, are you going to put some money underneath her pillow or do you want me to? And so I'm talking to her, kind of wishfully thinking, you know, hey, what happened last night? Did the tooth fairy show up? And she said, no. I was like, oh, man. Okay, well, I said, where did you put the tooth? And she said, well, I had it right here on my bedside table. And I said, oh, well, that's the deal. You got to put it under the pillow. No wonder. You got to put it under the pillow. And that's what cues the fairy. And she said, yeah, but the tooth fairy would wake me up, I guess, if it was underneath the pillow. And then she kind of talked herself out of it. And it was so sweet. And she goes, yeah, but I guess as she flutters over me, she would wake me up if I put it here as well. So, yeah, I'll put it under the pillow. And when I woke up this morning, I realized we did it again. We forgot again. Now the second night in a row. Fortunately, we have a third night tonight that hopefully will bring some redemption. And we'll be able to remember and actually make good on this faith that this precious little girl has. But as I was thinking about that story, I thought about how both silly, but also so helpful it is to think about how different God is than the tooth fairy. See, God is not like the tooth fairy. God does not forget. God does not renege on his promises. God does not ignore what he has said before. God isn't someone who's one to lose sight of the fact that he had already said this was going to happen. No, our God is a God who is going to do what he said he's going to do. And we can take that to the bank. Our God is one who's going to make good on every promise he's made because that is who he is. And because of what Jesus has done. See, having faith in a tooth fairy is really childish. But having faith in what Jesus did is remarkable because Jesus, he died on a cross. He predicted it. 3 days later, he was resurrected from the dead. And this is what Paul and Silas had faith in. Their faith was fastened. Their feet were planted in what Jesus had done that set off this chain of events that we're still talking about today. God is so much more dependable than anyone else, anything else we could ever imagine. And when you are in the dark night of your soul, when it's midnight and it feels like the hits just keep on coming, I hope that you'll remember that there is a lens of faith, even in the middle of our suffering, that is strong enough to hold us every single time. Strong enough to hold us sure. Strong enough to hold us in the middle of the pain and in the middle of the heartache, even if it doesn't get better. Even if around the corner there isn't good news. This is how we pandemic-proof our faith, is to fasten our faith in who Jesus is and what he's done and what God has actually promised us to do. I want to pray, but before I do that, I just want to set up this last verse because this verse we just looked at, we only read the first part of it, but I want to show you the second half of it. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and they were singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Next week, we're going to talk about how amazing that was. But before we get there, I do just want to pray, and I specifically want to pray for any one of you who feel like you're in the middle of the dark night. It feels like maybe it's midnight. Maybe you're in the middle of infertility. Or maybe you're in the middle of a season of singleness, hoping that you're going to meet someone or that something good is going to happen. Or maybe you're in the middle of an extremely emotionally challenging job situation. Or maybe you've got a financial crisis. Or maybe you've got a health crisis. I want to just invite you as I pray to put your faith not in the fact that you hope it gets better, not in whatever future outcome you're hoping for, but in what is actually true, that God is who he says he is, that he is with you, that he will bring something good out of everything that you're going through. And you can take that to the bank. You can rest your whole life in that. That is a faith that can hold you in the middle of anything. And I want to invite you to put your faith in him. So would you join me as we pray? Heavenly Father, one of the hardest things about life is that it doesn't end. It doesn't stop. Oftentimes it feels like the suffering, the pain, the hits, they just keep on coming. But God, we've got to recognize that there is a way to have a faith that can be secure and firm no matter what we're going through. And I pray right now for every person that's in the middle of a struggle, that's in the middle of their dark night, that maybe feels like it's midnight in their soul, that you would give them the hope to be able to put their faith in you. Not in what they hope to be true, but what we know to be true, that you are with us, that you will bring something good out of everything hard that we go through. And Father, I pray that they would feel, maybe even in this moment, as sure about that as they have ever felt about anything in their life. And we thank you for Jesus, and we pray all of this in his name. Amen.